I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
The Final Edition presents a public service message from the National Denier Service.
Here at the NDS, we've been getting a lot of calls asking if the Oklahoma tornadoes are the result of global warming. The best answer is that scientists disagree. Both real scientists and the ones paid for by right-wing front groups with bland patriotic names funded by the Koch brothers. We simply don't have enough information about tornadoes, weather, or bland patriotic front groups to make an informed decision. Most of what we know about tornadoes comes from The Wizard of Oz and Twister, one a classic and the other not even available on Netflix. Trying to formulate national policy based on a mishmash of the Lollipop Guild and Helen Hunt is itself a natural disaster. As deniers, we know that denial itself is like a tornado, demolishing some truths while preserving others. David Koch is very much like a twister, except twisters don't make big donations to the institutions they subvert. So the next time a tornado hits, do what Dorothy did. Lie on your bed and wait for your black and white farmhouse to take you someplace better. With any luck, you'll make it to that Disney CGI Oz and get to hang out with the magical James Franco.
The preceding announcement was paid for by Americans for Preceding Announcements, a bland patriotic front group funded by the Kochs.
Bring you a special report from ABC News' John Carl, who says President Obama made a pornographic movie. What's the latest, John Carl?
Diane, Barack Obama has made a filthy movie called Hail to the Dictator, a feature-length marathon of degrading anal sex and loud verbal abuse of white people.
What an incredible story, John Carl of ABC News. Have you seen this movie yourself?
I have seen this movie myself, Diane. And by that, I mean I have talked to people who have seen the movie themselves. Reportedly, the president made this movie while in the White House, financed by taxpayer money, some of which he uses on camera, while naked, rendering it unusable.
These people who have seen the movie, are they partisan sources who want to embarrass the president?
Not at all. They are, in fact, partisan sources who want to embarrass the president, but do not want to be seen doing so in public.
And is the movie available to the public, John Carl of ABC News?
It is widely available, which is to say it is not available. So far, the movie can only be viewed in dream form.
As a dream.
Correct. My sources, or to be more precise, my source, this one guy, says he saw it in a dream and said Obama was covered in oil and kept asking for pudding and a rectal thermometer, and that the president needs to answer for this.
That sounds shameful, John Carl of ABC News.
Well, now that's editorializing, Diane. I deal strictly in fact. I can only say the president was in a full-length pornographic film because it was seen in a dream by a completely unbiased member of his bitter political opposition.
Has there been any response from the White House so far, John Carl of ABC News?
Not yet, but my source will call me as soon as he wakes up.
Well, thank you. That was a fair and professional report from John Carl of ABC News.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Welcome to This Week in Canada, eh? The Molsons of Talk Radio. What's that all about? With me are astronaut Chris Hadfield and regulars Neil Young and Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather. Anyone know what happened in Canada this week? Yes, Chris Hadfield.
I've been talking about my trip in space.
Space? What's that have to do with Canada?
I'm Canadian. I made a video in the International Space Station. I sang Space Oddity by David Bowie, eh?
You're an astronaut. Why didn't you do Ziggy Stardust?
I sang Ground Control to Major Tom. I got 7 million hits on YouTube.
Sorry, this show is about things that happen in Canada, not things that fly over Canada.
Big birds flying across the sky. They were throwing shadows on our eyes.
Yes, Neil Young.
Why didn't he sing a Canadian song?
Hey, Major Tom, why didn't you sing something by Rush or Bachman Turner Overdrive, eh?
Are you kidding? I'm the biggest thing to happen to Canada since Argo.
I'm about to lose my Canadian reserve. Nothing is as big as Argo.
No, nothing at all. That's for sure.
I thought of something that happened, eh?
Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather.
My grandson, Kiefer Sutherland, announced he's going to reboot 24.
Reboot? What's that all about?
He's doing 24 again. It's a sequel, like my Harvest Moon album.
It's shorter. Only 12 hours. You only get half a day to save the world now, eh?
But what does 24 have to do with Canada, eh?
If Kiefer saves the world, that includes Canada. I've seen it from space.
Wait a minute. Does this include Quebec?
There's no way to save the world without saving Quebec.
Not in 12 hours, anyway.
Oh, that's so true.
That's too bad.
Wish I had 12 more hours, but that's about all the time we have. Remember, visit Canada, the country that seems friendly because of the people living to its south.
This is Ground Control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear.
Lester?
Riders on the Storm. Riders on the Storm.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to WAFT, the Afterlife's only classic rock station. My guests today are two people who performed on the track we just heard. Please welcome from The Doors, Jim Morrison, who's been here since July 3rd, 1971, and Ray Manzarek, who just joined us a couple of days ago.
Thanks. It's great to be here. And it's great to see you, Jim.
The killer awoke before dawn.
Jim?
He put his boots on.
He hasn't changed.
This is quite a reunion. Are you planning to play together as The Doors?
There are things unknown, and there are things known. In between are the doors.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm still drunk.
If we play together, we can't call it The Doors. We'd have to call it The Doors of the Afterlife.
See, you're still bound by your legal agreement with Robbie Krieger and John Densmore?
Yeah, although when I was alive, they said I could use Light My Fire for a commercial in hell. So Jim and I are making a Hyundai ad down there.
It's a good gig. They got beer!
How does it feel seeing each other for the first time since 1971?
This is the end. My only friend, the end.
I'm actually more interested in meeting Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thanks, guys. Up next, the Brian Jones joins the Ellington Hendrix Band. Oh, yeah.
The Final Edition has learned that several Muppets on Sesame Street have gone on strike. Strong Powers reports.
We all know our favorite Sesame Street characters, but what about those Muppets we don't pay attention to? The Muppets used to simply move the lesson along. Muppets like Telly Monster, Murray, and Zoe. Don't know who I'm talking about? Neither does Mr. Snuffleupagus, and they're mad as hell about it and aren't going to take it anymore. I spoke to these furious furries to find out what their frustration is all about. We'd also like you to know that this segment is brought to you by the letter F and the number 5, as in 5 days on the Muppet strike.
People want to know who we are.
Telemonster explained the essence of the work stoppage from his perspective.
Oh, no. I'm sick and tired of worrying my guts out and having a nervous breakdown so that Abby the fairy can calm me down about the word of the day. She isn't even an original character. Why do I have to make her look good?
Murray Monster agrees.
Booyah! No more will I be the red furry thing that introduces the next act. Just because kids would rather have 126 Elmo dolls and not one Murray doll doesn't mean I don't have value. Therefore, the word on the street today is strike.
Zoe Monster could not contain her rage.
I am done with being the stupid Muppet. They already have Grover. Why do they need another one?
Then she started asking probing, perhaps dangerous questions.
Have you ever wondered whatever happened to Harry Monster?
No.
Well, he hasn't been seen in an awfully long time.
Maybe he talked too much and they made him disappear. Oh, no. Maybe they did that. Did they do that? Oh, no. Did he talk too much? Do we talk too much? Are they going to make us disappear? Oh, no. We're all going to disappear.
Telly, calm down. This strike is not brought to you by the letter D. Besides, the revolution begins tonight because my pet rock, Rocco, told me that I should throw him through the window of Hooper's store at midnight. I hope it hits Alan in the head.
Oh, Zoe, Alan won't be in the store at midnight. Hoopers will be closed.
Booyah! Then we burn it to the ground. Wait, your pet rock talks? That's weird.
Strong language coming from the B-list Muppets. The final edition went to the A-listers to get their thoughts on this B-list strike. For the most part, they didn't know there was one. Aren't you concerned about your co-workers' rights?
Elmo is not concerned. Elmo has 4 segments per show and is very satisfied with Elmo's current contract. And Elmo has a musical to produce every other show. So Elmo is preoccupied with Elmo's creative thoughts.
Meanwhile, the Count seemed very concerned with the length of the strike thus far.
That's 5. 5 days of strike. And 3 Muppets whom I still can't remember their names.
The only concerned star of the show seemed to be Bert, of Bert and Ernie.
Of course I'm concerned. This is a very serious issue. Ernie, it's not funny. These characters should feel as equal as the rest of us and treated the same.
Bert, oh, Bert, these Muppets don't deserve respect. They're riding our coattails. If they don't like it here, they can go to the electric company. They can enjoy their lives in the slums of PBS.
Ernie.
Then we went to the king himself. Now in semi-retirement, Kermit the Frog, to get his thoughts.
Hey-ho, this is truly unfortunate. I don't know who you're talking about, but I can certainly relate. Little fun fact, when I started, I always thought of Cookie Monster and Oscar the Grouch as second-class Muppets. I mean, one got paid in cookies, and the other one slept on set in a trash can. How serious could I take them? However, with this current strike, I hope for Frank Oz's sake it's resolved soon. But I'm sure it's not something Gordon can't handle. After all, he did take care of Hooper when he got out of line.
And so it goes. The less appreciated Muppets striking, the toy store favorites not noticing. Final edition will keep you abreast. And let us pray it does not become violent, as Zoe Monster insinuated.
7! 7 Molotov cocktails!
Sleeping the dance away. On my way to where the air is sweet. Get me down, we have to get Street.
Hello, I'm Gail Weinstein, and welcome to Interesting Humans, my show filled with human interest stories that make you say, interesting. Today I bring you Amy Copeland, the survivor of a horrific, flesh-eating bacteria attack that took both her hands and one leg. Through the miracle of technology, Miss Copeland has been given the gift of grip again, as she received two bionic hands, courtesy of Touch Bionics. I traveled to Amy's hometown in Snellville, Georgia, to learn what life was like with her new $6 million hands. But she wasn't available. The Today Show booked her. Then she was speaking to ABC News. Then she was doing a bit on The Daily Show. Then she had an interview with her town paper. So we spoke to her boyfriend, Ryan Walker. Ryan, it must be amazing to see your lady love once again hold objects. To think that science has come so far that technology can allow a person such as your beloved Amy to have some semblance of her old life and to perform activities with the use of bionic hands is marvelous. But how have you adapted to her new appendages?
She crushes my balls, man!
Excuse me?
Have you ever gotten a hand job from the Terminator? That's what it's like, man! She crushes my balls!
Well, I wasn't so much thinking of the intimate moments. I was thinking more of the experience of holding hands with a woman who thought she never could again. It must be incredible to have a relationship with one of the primary beneficiaries of the wonder of science.
My balls are crushed, man. That's what I think about. And she squeezes the shit out of my thing, man.
Well, okay. Why don't you tell her to ease up?
I do. But then she says, resistance is futile. I don't even know what that means. And my balls.
I know. Are crushed. Ryan, if this relationship is so painful to you, why don't you break it off?
Because it's cool seeing her crush an unopened beer can with her Terminator hands. It looks like a car being demolished if the car had tons of beer in it.
Well, there it is.
I just wish that beer can wasn't sometimes my balls! She crushes my balls, man!
This has been Interesting Humans. Tonight we learned about exploring the wonders of science and how that affects the essence of the human condition. Next time we'll make sure the person of interest is booked before we travel to their home. Why didn't I do that?
My balls are crushed, man!
It's time for the final edition's finance feature, Money or Die. The current scandal concerning the IRS's scrutiny of Tea Party groups is hard to untangle and even harder to comprehend. To make it clearer, we take you back 12 months to a typical audit of a typical Tea Party group by the IRS.
Good morning, Mr. John J. Jablonski. Remind me, was there a Jablonski in the State House in Philadelphia in 1787?
Good day, flunky.
I like your hat. Those three-corner jobs are on their way back in, I hear. Now, your organization is applying for tax exemption as a Section 501c4 social welfare organization. Is that correct?
It is, flunky. Let us be done with this speedily.
This audit is to determine whether the Whiskey Rebellion Revival Militia is an organization that practices social welfare, or if it is a political organization.
Hearken, flunky. Thou hast no friggin' right to question our agenda. That's blatant bias. How wouldst you like it if Hannity gets wind of this? Huh?
Worm.
Well, John...
That's sir to you, worm.
Well, Sir John, It's not my job to grant or deny you tax-exempt status. I'm here to determine which part of the code covers it. I need to know the nature of the group's activities because...
It's thy friggin' job to give the Whiskey Rebellion Revival Militia tax-exempt status! No questions asked!
Because if it's political, as its name sorta suggests, your tax-exempt status would be as a Section 527 political organization.
Never! A Section 527 is an abomination! Don't tread on me, worm! I bite!
Duly noted. Now, your filing includes a list of the Whiskey Rebellion Revival Militia's proposed activities. 1. Abolition of all taxes. Is that social welfare?
Taxes are the iron links in the chains of tyranny!
Okay, very colorful. 2. Starving the beast of big government till it dies in the dust. Starving things to death is a welfare activity?
The beast is welfare!
Oh, okay. So killing welfare is a welfare activity.
Yeah. I mean, yay.
Not a political one.
I'll tell thee what's political, pal! Totally biased victimization of a legitimate 501c4 organization! I bet thee don't grill your friggin' Democrat buddies like this! You'll get your orders straight from Barack Hussein Obama!
Speaking of which... 3. The removal and indefinite detention of the foreign-born usurper in the White House by any means necessary. Nothing political about that, I assume?
Nothing. Don't even mention the election. Do it, flunky.
It do not, no. On a slightly more personal note, one final question. You know, the first act of the original Whiskey Rebellion in western Pennsylvania was to burn the houses and belongings of tax inspectors, was it not?
Be warned accordingly, worm.
My, aren't you the tough negotiator? Now, if I declare you on the 527...
Thou canst not friggin' saddle me with the 527!
You'll have to disclose your donors. Then you personally will be out of business, because the Kochs and the Langones and the Walstons and the rest of the .0001% really don't like disclosures, do they?
I'm begging you, man.
You know something? No one is more aware than the IRS just how irretrievably rotten the system is, from the top down and left to right. You're no different. To use your ersatz parlance correctly for once, you and your Whiskey Rebellion 2.0 buddies are utterly boughten, whores to the core. So, not only am I giving you your 501c4, but I've built enough embarrassingly direct questions into this audit that should Obama prevail in November, which he will, because you xenophobic throwbacks are going down in flames, next spring you can go to Hannity or Daryl Issa or some other loudmouth con job and raise hell about IRS bias.
Okay, but why are you...
Because I love to watch all of you squirm.
But won't you lose...
Sure, I'll get the boot. Sideways. But then I'm going to run Obamacare. Life and death stakes. Tens of trillions of bucks. The squirming will be epic. I'll be happier than a rat in raw sewage. So, for all the good it'll do you, congratulations on your 501c4.
I bid you good day, sir.
Very nice hat.
Somebody's stealing America. Somebody's breaking down our front doors and taking everything. Our country stands for.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, Barry Lank, John Marshall, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, and Tony Hendra. Be sure to visit thefinaledition.com often for more sizzling satire with teeth. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Kreisler and Tony Hendra, and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2013.
legend were dead. And even now,